Members will now come to order. It's 10 p.m. on February 13th. Today we are going to have public testimony on two bills. With me today are Representative Tolton, Representative Hughes is walking in. Our alternate, Representative Chenault, Representative Keto, Representative Josephson, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. The two items that we're taking public testimony on today are House Bill 248, the alcohol tax, and House Bill 252, the vessel passenger tax. We'll be starting with House Bill 248. We'll be limiting public testimony to, let's see how many people we have. 3 minutes. And we're going to start with Susan Montenson, Denali Brewing Company, Talkeetna. Are you with us, Susan?
I am. Thank you. Yes, I am.
I apologize.
I'm on with you guys. I'd first like to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to the committee today.
And for the record, can you state your name and affiliation so we can maybe write it?
My name is Sasan Mosanin. It's S-A-S-S-A-N. Last name is M-O-S-S-A-N-E-N. My affiliation is with Denali Brewing Company. I'm the founder of the brewery.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Please continue.
Denali Brewing is located 100 miles north of Anchorage in the Matsu Borough. Myself and the other founding partner made our first batch of beer in 2009 in just under 1,000 square feet with no other employees. In the last 7 years, we have undergone 5 expansions, taking our building to 30,000 square feet and enabling us to employ 25 year-round employees. Our aggressive growth was fueled by employees that believed in our mission, partners that realized there would be no return on investment for many years to come, and our local lending institution that was willing to lend to us despite the insane idea of manufacturing in semi-rural Alaska. On one side, the price of beer is set by forces that are not easily influenced by the 25-plus license holders in Alaska. On the other side, we have some of the highest costs of producing beer anywhere. Denali Brewing's aggressive growth has been good for employment and the many local businesses that we work with, but it's also placed us in a fragile position. We are young and leveraged to the hilt. Even small changes in the fragile balance of price point can lead our customers to move to beverages produced outside of Alaska, or equally bad, to lower quality beverages that contain higher ABV. In the process, not only is our ability to create jobs and invest in our community diminished, but the very foundation of our ability to make beer is threatened. The 35-cent excise tax that we currently pay is already amongst the highest in the nation. A doubling of the excise tax will directly limit our ability to reinvest and continue to create jobs. Thank you for the time again.
Thank you for calling in today. Next up is Jeannie Catania from Haynes. Are you with us? In that case, we'll come back to her. Bill Fry, Bear Creek Winery, with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. My name is Bill Fry, F-R-Y. I'm with Bear Creek Winery here in Homer, Alaska.
And please continue.
Thank you. My wife and I own and operate this winery. I'd like to give you some background that I didn't provide you in the email I sent to you all. We opened 12 years ago. We sold 600 gallons in that first year, which is 3,000 bottles. Last year, we sold over 18,000 gallons, which is 92,000 bottles. We now have between 8 and 15 employees, depending on the time of year, and our operations have grown to include a new bottling plant, warehouse, event pavilion, and large freezer. We purchased over 37,000 pounds of Alaskan fruit and berries last year from Alaskan pickers. These people range from kids on bicycles to berry brokers that have groups picking for them from Cantwell to Southeast. We also buy from villagers and native corporations. We spent $55,000 last year in Alaskan fruit, and that money stays in the state. I want to point this out because to showcase that unlike Alaska breweries, our Alaskan element is much more than just the water we use in our wine. Alaskan brewers don't have hops and grain farms in the state. They purchase their ingredients from outside of Alaska. And I also want to say that we do want to pay our share to balance the budget, and we agree with the governor's plan, and we understand the need to raise this excise tax. We're not opposed to this bill. However, I am here today to ask for an amendment that provides Alaskan wineries, distilleries, and distributors to be given the same exemption that the breweries are now afforded. Currently, the way the bill reads, we would pay $5 a gallon while the breweries would pay 70 cents a gallon. And we just can't raise our prices to cover this increase. Making quality wine from Alaskan local ingredients is expensive. Our price point is as high as it can go. And we have never raised our prices since we opened, even though our cost has gone up. We're competing with $10 and $12 bottles of wine from outside. And I think it's also worth pointing out that we're one of the few wineries that uses American-made bottles, corks, and labels, when all the other wineries use Chinese bottles. So if we were not to get the exemption that's afforded the breweries, our options would be to buy berries from Canada and Oregon, hire two less people this summer, cut back on our expansion and capital projects budget, or go back to Chinese bottles. So I would like to also add that over 2 million gallons of wine was imported into Alaska last year, which brought in $5 million in excise taxes to the Department of Revenue. Our 18,000 gallons of wine contributed $45,000 in excise taxes, but the majority of that was paid by our distributor, which is why I asked, along with wineries and distilleries, you include distributors being granted the same exemption with regard to Alaskan-made products. They sell more of our wine than we do, so to leave them out would put upward pressure on our price per bottle. So what I'm asking is for either extend the exemption or remove it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Stephen Gertensen, a.k.a.
Arcos Brewery.
In Palmer, you got that right. Thank you for joining us today. Please state your name and affiliation.
My name is Stephen Gertensen. Last name, Gertensen. I'm the founder of Arcos Brewery in Palmer. Palmer is located an hour north of Anchorage. We are in our fifth year. We manufacture beer in Palmer. I'm a brewer. I do it because I love it. We do it in Palmer because we enjoy our community and being in the fabric of our community. We are set to expand again this spring and bring on more full-time employees. I'd like to also point out that breweries are, it's not seasonal. We hire full-time employees year-round from our local community, so we are providing jobs. The proposed increases, while we do want to balance the budget and do our fair share, we manufacture in the state, and successful manufacturing businesses in Alaska are rare. So breweries, wineries, and distilleries are contributing already by creating jobs, by creating products. Additionally, many people visit Alaska, believe it or not. Many people go on vacation in general because of the breweries, wineries, and distilleries that they can visit. So not only is it locals that support us, but during the summer season, people come to Alaska. Many, many people come to Alaska, or wherever they're going, but in this case Alaska, to visit the breweries. So for us to expand and continue on with our plans, we're opposed to this bill as far as the doubling of the taxes. We need more certainty, and this would be a difficult thing to swallow, basically, for our plans in the coming spring. We doubled our production compared to last year, and we're set to triple it this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Looks like Jane Catania is back online. Jane, are you with us?
Yes, this is Jeannie Kitayama in Haines.
Oh, thanks. Please state your affiliation, or you're just representing yourself.
I am the co-owner of Haines Brewing Company.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and please continue.
Okay. We have great concerns with HB 248's impact to our small businesses and encourage you not to pass this and raise this tax. We're running a successful business in a small rural community, particularly a manufacturing business such as a craft brewery. It already includes the economic burdens of availability and shipping costs of heavy raw materials coming in and the final products going out. And with a small population, we're working with a small profit margin to produce product that we're proud of. And the additional taxes proposed by HB 248 only work against economic development in the Alaskan communities. Small craft breweries such as ours are based on community support, and each of these local breweries gain hometown loyalty and that sense of community ownership. Like this summer in Haines, we moved from our 600-square-foot brewery to a brand-new, beautiful 3,000-square-foot building on Main Street in Haines, and thanks to the muscle power of the many people who helped move this heavy equipment. But once the building was up, community folks were thrilled and optimistic that Haines is finally progressing with the downtown revitalization movement. So in addition to local media coverage, an Anchorage TV station reporter was so impressed with the community support that we had that she aired a feature report on her move. So this kind of community support has spurred our borough government to now work on an economic property tax incentive to further encourage business development. And the state statute allows these types of incentives for the same reasons that we're asking you now to help and not hinder small businesses in Alaska. So thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Next off, let's go down to the peninsula. Gary Superman, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, Gary? Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Gary Superman, board member Char. I own the Hunger Hut Bar, Motel, and the Liquor Store. Yeah, I picked up the transmittal letter here this morning. Haven't had a chance to read it prior to now. And the governor makes some, I think, pretty outrageous statements in his letter here that this proposed increase is reasonable, especially considering the high societal cost of alcoholic beverage consumption. You know, in 2002, 2003, we gathered together the folks from the industry to then fight Lisa Murkowski's what we thought was completely outrageous tax increase on the industry here in the state. At that time, taxation was doubled. Now, I'm pretty sure that most of you folks on the committee have seen or may have before you the spreadsheet from the taxation levels across the nation. 13 years have passed since the Murkowski bill was successful, and we are still basically at the top of the heap by head and shoulders. If you look at the rates, currently $12.80, $2.50, $1.07 on beer, you'll see, as I said, head and shoulders above most of the other states. Now, a lot of the other states, came in and raised their taxes after we did, but they came nowhere near where we are set at now. If this bill does go forward by some chance, hopefully not, we will be stuck in the stratosphere as far as taxation on alcohol is concerned in this state as compared to the rest of the nation. And that will no doubt have a stifling effect. I know it's going to have an effect on my operation, and I employ nine people. I built a new store. I try to maintain a competitive sales price at my establishment in comparison to town. Very difficult to do. I don't think that the industry could really absorb this outrageous increase that's being proposed and remain viable. There's a lot of other fronts that we're fighting on. I know that my bar is continuing to sink in margins, continuing to sink in patronage, for a variety of reasons. I think that this would be one more nail in the coffin to closing down some of the local pubs. Certainly, the testimony from Bear Creek that we heard here earlier would have an impact on his sales. I carry his product in my liquor store, trying to stay competitive with the rest of the peninsula. With this increase, his product's coming out of my place because it will no longer be competitive with the cheaper wines. The impact of this, I think, is just so negative across the board that I'm hoping that the legislature will come to its senses on this and not try to duplicate an already outrageous rate that we have in this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. I might add your representative is at the table today, too, if you want to say hello to Mike.
See you Tuesday, Mike.
Thanks for the warning, Gary. Thanks again, Gary. Bill Howell, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
How you doing, Bill?
Pretty good, Kurt. How are you?
Wish I was home.
My name is Bill Howell, and I'm here representing the consumer of Alaska. I'm not affiliated with any brewery, winery, distillery, or char. I'm a resident of Sterling, have been for the last 12 years. And I'm a retired naval officer, and I've also worked for over 10 years as administrator at Kenai Peninsula College, and I still teach there as adjunct faculty. House Bill 248, the alcohol tax bill, as proposed by Governor Walker, would double the excise tax rates on alcoholic beverages in Alaska. I want to say that again. Double existing tax rates. We already have some of the highest alcohol taxes of any state, even before the proposed increase, as Mr. Superman just mentioned. Under the current tax scheme, the state is already taking in almost $40 million a year in excise taxes, and now the governor proposes to double that. Let's be perfectly clear who's paying that $40 million a year. I am, along with the rest of the citizens of Alaska. The producers, distributors, and retailers of beer, wine, and spirits have no choice but to pass this tax, just like any other tax, right along to the end consumers. They may still go out of business, but they'll have to pass it along to us, to me and any other person in this state that wants to consume alcohol. That's who Governor Walker is directly targeting with this tax. Me and every other Alaskan who might like a glass of wine with their meal or a nice beer after a hard day's work. It seems to me that we are already paying more than our fair share, what with state taxes, 3 to 4 times the national average. So why single out this industry and these consumers for such a draconian increase? I guess I missed the proposal from Governor Walker to double the current taxes on fishing, oil, and tourism. After all, if it's acceptable to just double the excise tax on alcohol, why not just double all taxes? I'm not saying that you ladies and gentlemen of the legislature don't need to find new sources of revenue. Clearly you do, even if the state budget still needs about another $1 billion cut out of it, including cuts to sacred cows like education and health care. But the source of this new revenue should be broad-based, like a statewide sales tax, not targeted at one industry and its consumers, especially when that industry is already shouldering just about the largest state tax burden out there when compared to the rates of the other 49 states. In summary, I'd ask you, ladies and gentlemen, to give the common folks of Alaska a break and not move HB 248 forward. I thank you all for the opportunity to testify before you on this issue, and I hope you will do right by the citizens of Alaska.
And for the committee, I'd like to add that Bill's being real humble right now. He's written 3 books on the history of beer in Alaska, 2 of which I've read. I'm starting the 3rd one, Bill.
And good. Glad to hear it, Kurt. I'll be happy to autograph them for you.
I think he already did. Thanks again, Bill.
Thank you.
Crystal Schoenrock, are you with us, Crystal?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us today. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
I'm a member of CHAR. I'm a secretary of Kenai Peninsula CHAR. I also own the Fortin's Bar and Liquor Store in Nikiski. And my name is Crystal Schoenrock. And we are about the 2nd largest tax state. I think we're right behind Hawaii. But that's, I have had to lay off some of my people, and I've had to cut their hours because I just can't afford to pay them now because all these companies are laying off people. And we've had several hundred laid off from the slope, which has hurt our industry because now their money is tight and they're trying to hang on to it. So this has been hurting us all the way around. And I feel like if the slope people have to take a cut in their pay to keep their job and be able to work, the governor ought to have to take a cut in his too. That seems only fair to me, but this tax is just beyond belief. I don't see how I could afford to do it. I don't have very many customers, and things have been being so slow, and this tax is out of this world as far as I'm concerned. I think you guys could find another way to cut something, or, like I said, take a cut and pay, like the rest of us. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for participating, Crystal. Carmen Lund, Kodiak.
Oh, excuse me. Got it? Okay. Good morning, and thanks for hearing my testimony. My name is Carmen Lundy, and I am director of Kodiak Char. When the liquor industry was once again taxed some years ago, I thought at the time I would never, ever live long enough to see another proposal for tax hikes on alcohol. I was wrong, because here we are. The tax hike at that time was so high, I believe around 300%, that we became by far the highest tax state on alcohol in the United States. Today we are still paying the highest alcohol taxes in the nation, with a couple small exceptions. I believe this industry already contributes heavily to the state's tax base, somewhere around $40 million per year, and the hospitality industry should not and does not deserve another tax on top of the existing high taxes already imposed. We simply do not believe you should be looking at the hospitality industry for more money. I was going to tell you the numbers and percentages on a gallon of spirits, wine, and beer, but listening to Gary Superman and Bill Howell, I understand you understand what those numbers are, that you realize how extremely high our taxes are already. I believe the tax proposal is for 10 cents a drink, which would bring the tax on a gallon of spirits to $25.60. I just can hardly believe I just said that, but that's the number. A gallon of wine to $5 and a gallon of beer to $2.40. I consider these proposals over the top and completely outrageous. I am fully aware of the $3.5 billion deficit and feel other avenues should be explored, especially cuts in government spending and revisiting the tax cuts for oil. I am in favor of a state lottery, which people enjoy and which seems to work well for other states, putting a great deal of money into the coffers. I am completely opposed to touching the permanent fund. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for participating. Clay Murphy, Fairbanks.
This is Clay Murphy, Fairbanks. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you've got our undivided attention.
Well, thank you for being there on a Saturday. It's nice to be able to provide my comments. My name is Clay Murphy. I'm a 35-year Alaska resident. I've lived all over the state, worked all over the state. And I'm here simply as a taxpayer and commenting on the alcohol tax. I want to let you know that I am adamantly opposed to the tax. All businesses, restaurants will pass their costs on to me as a consumer, me and my family, my extended family. Again, we are double taxed by the actions of our governor and legislators if this bill passes. This bill will hurt small business. I'm dismayed when I read articles like this morning's Newsminer. Senator Coghill is introducing an abortion bill. We have a crisis going on right now. Where is the focus on the budget? I'm pleased with the House and their focus. The recent focus that I noticed earlier this week. Why is this tax coming out now? It seems like an afterthought, without providing the necessary information to legislators and public as to why it is introduced now. I didn't see the information that these previous people noted that you have. That information hasn't been widely distributed to the public. And I would like to know what exactly the money will be used for.
You can find you can find all of it on our the Labor and Commerce website. The minute we get any material and we post it.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Please continue.
And, I'd like to know what exactly the money will be used for. And I understand that some of it will be used for some of the problems that alcohol causes. And I'd like to know how much is expected to be generated for whatever purpose. The governor is recently on a roll with taxation. I'm afraid it's going to become a steamroller. I'm asking the legislators to consider the harm to individuals and businesses. I'm asking our representatives to pressure the governor to make further cuts to agencies. I believe this can be done without harm to the people of the state of Alaska. I think we can all think of instances of outrage by the way some of the money is spent by the agencies of this state. And I've worked with businesses where the revenues have decreased over the years at different times, and we've had to make cuts in a lot of different ways. It's not easy, and I think that the governor and his agencies have only picked the low-hanging fruit. And it's not right to hurt businesses the way this bill will without further digging into the agencies and make cuts. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you folks.
And thanks again for participating.
That's all I have.
Thanks again. Tiffany Hall, Seattle. Are you with us, Tiffany?
Hi there. Yes.
Please state your name and affiliation. We have a little echo. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Tiffany Hall, and I'm here as the Executive Director of Recover Alaska. And I live in Anchorage. I just happen to be in Seattle today, so thanks so much for letting me call in. Recover Alaska is a multi-sector action group working to reduce the harm caused by excessive alcohol consumption throughout the state. Increasing the existing alcohol excise tax will generate much-needed revenue for the many public services that rely on the state general fund. In this way, the tax functions as a revenue diversification strategy while also supporting long-standing public health and safety objectives. Additionally, there is substantial evidence indicating that increasing an alcohol tax reduces alcohol consumption. Reducing the negative impact of alcohol will also save money. The cost of alcohol abuse to Alaskans in lost productivity, healthcare costs, traffic crashes, criminal justice, protective services, all of this totals over $1.2 billion in 2010. That's billion with a B. Beyond the financial benefits, increasing the alcohol tax will also save lives. It will improve the health of our babies and will reduce underage drinking. Here in Alaska, in 1983 and 2002, statewide alcohol tax increases were followed by 29% and 11% decreases in the number of alcohol-related deaths, respectively. Alcohol taxes have been found to reduce the incidence of binge drinking during pregnancy, decreasing the occurrence of fetal alcohol syndrome, and also to significantly reduce youth alcohol consumption. This is important. Youth who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely than youth who don't drink until they're 21 to develop alcohol abuse or dependence as adults. Increases to state excise taxes on alcohol have been recommended by the Surgeon General, the Institutes of Medicine, the American Medical Association, and the Community Prevention Services Task Force because research indicates that increased alcohol excise taxes are directly related to decreased alcohol-related deaths, traffic crashes, violence, crime, and child abuse. To sum up, negative impacts of alcohol abuse cost the state over $1 billion a year. Increasing alcohol taxes will help bridge our fiscal gap by reducing those impacts and generating revenue. Also, alcohol plays a significant role in the leading causes of death, violence, and crime in Alaska. Increasing alcohol taxes will decrease consumption. Save Alaskan lives. Pass this bill. And I have sources to back up everything I said that I will submit via email. I don't want to take up more time. Thank you again for this opportunity, and thank you so much for your service to our state.
If you have some written testimony, please forward it to our office, and we'll make it part of the permanent record and post it on our website.
Wonderful. Will do. Thank you.
Thanks again. Michael Jeffrey, Barrow. Michael Jeffrey, you with us?
You hear me? Hello?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us.
Hello. Can you hear me there?
Yeah, we can hear you. Brief the news.
Hello?
Michael, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, we can hear you now, too, so please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sorry for that waste of time. This is Michael Jeffrey. I'm calling from Barrow in the middle of a blizzard. Our legislative information office is closed at the moment for obvious reasons, and I'm not affiliated with anyone. Just for background, I was the Superior Court judge here for 32 years, and prior to that, this legal services attorney. But at the moment, I'm retired, and so I'm not affiliated, and certainly I'm not speaking on behalf of the court system. But I strongly support HB 248. A previous speaker laid out a lot of the very good reasons, and I join in those comments. The point is that, as was stated, the alcohol abuse costs $1.2 billion in 2010. And again, there's lost productivity, there's the health care costs, crashes, criminal justice, protective services, public assistance, social services. That all adds up. And the research evidence-based one response that is effective, recommended by, again, the Institutes of Medicine and other, the American Medical Association, is just this, to increase state excises taxes on alcohol, because it not only generates revenue, but it targets something that unfortunately has caused a lot of heartache and to all over the state. And so it would be an excellent idea to take advantage of this proposal. We saw in Barrow, for example, at one point we went dry, and then there was another election, and the community went damp again, which meant that the people were allowed to bring alcohol back in. And it was very interesting to see how the crime rate doubled when alcohol came back in. Now, I'm not here advocating, you know, dry status, but I'm just saying it's an example of what the harm that alcohol can cause. I appreciate the hard work that the industry, the we've heard the many speakers, and I appreciate their businesses and so on, and their concern. But having seen, unfortunately, the crime after crime after crime being alcohol-related, suicides being alcohol-related, and these things are, you know, beyond, you know, especially when you think of someone taking their life while they're high or taking the life of others. I mean, those are beyond price. And something that can not only raise money to bring needed services, including to place things like domestic violence shelters and early childhood education and treatment for substance abuse and mental health, that kind of thing, while also targeting, allowing people to continue to use alcohol, but to help in the cost that it brings to the state. The issue of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder even one baby who is severely affected, that one child can bring $1 or $2 million in cost over their lifetime for the various services that they need. And binge drinking by moms is one of the worst risk factors for causing fetal alcohol spectrum disorder conditions. So for all those reasons, I support HB 248 and appreciate very much this chance to share my thoughts.
Well, thank you very much. I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Dan Ortiz some time ago, and thank you for sitting in. Larry Hackenmiller, Fairbanks.
Yeah, my name is Larry Hackenmiller. I'm the Secretary of ICHAR, and I wish to speak against the passage of House Bill 248, which doubles the alcohol tax for the purpose of closing the budget gap. You know, in the Department of Revenue's presentation that accompanied the bill, the last major tax was in 2002, but it also created an alcohol and other drug abuse treatment and prevention fund where 50% of the alcohol taxes would be deposited and used for mental health budget, fund code 1180. Today, that means $20 million went to this alcohol and other drug abuse treatment and prevention fund. Now, how much money was spent on alcohol treatment and prevention, and how much on other drug abuse treatment and prevention? Now, today we want to double the cost on and the burden on alcohol consumers, so half the money can go for paying for alcohol other than alcohol drug abuse treatment and prevention programs. Does this make any sense? Because of this dedication of half the alcohol taxes to include other drug abuse treatment and prevention, this tax finds definition in the word punitive. It is punishing the alcohol consumer, it is severely discriminatory, and it's punitive. On page 11 of the document, DOR document, you know, your new sustainable Alaskan plan on closing the budget gap, I don't see any revenue for marijuana. Aren't we going to make some money in taxes for marijuana? And maybe they can pay the $20 million that goes to this health fund code 1180. And you don't have to have the burden on the alcohol consumers. And certainly they'd raise over $40 million a year. Now, the additional $40 million new revenue component coming from the new alcohol tax is incorrect. You are increasing the general fund revenue by only $20 million because the other $20 million is dedicated to the expenditure side of the budget gap. Throwing another $20 million into the mental health budget, fund code 1180, will increase government spending. Give any department of the state another $20 million bucks and you will see more office space, computers, copy machines, employees with benefits, and no new programs just to burn up the money. And with no legislative appropriation control due to the dedicated, excuse me, but not illegally dedicated, funds assured by this statute. Not enough homework done on this budget gap model. The state budget footprint needs to be decreased first. There are more spending reductions to be found. I just found $20 million, and if you look at all the other dedicated but not illegally dedicated funds, I'm sure you'll find more. This time, the alcohol tax is a punitive tax and should not be considered in your budget gap proposal. Unless we decrease the budget expenditure footprint down to where it's sustainable, we will be revisiting new revenue alternatives or taxes all over again in the near future. Taxes never go away. They always go bigger. Just ask the alcohol consumers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Robert McCormick. Are you with us?
Yes, this is Robert McCormick.
Oh, please state your name and affiliation for the record. Thank you for joining us this morning.
My name is Robert McCormick. I live in Chugiak. I work at Glacier Brew House and Orso in downtown Anchorage, and I serve on the Alaska Char Board, and I am the treasurer of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. I'm concerned with the economy of our state, as are you, and I recognize the need to find new sources of income for the state. I can appreciate that. Personally, I believe these should be from sources that are broad-based, so everyone pays their fair share. I also believe additional income should come from sources where we currently pay less than other states on average and not from sources where we already tax more than the average. In Alaska, we pay the second highest tax on spirits in the nation, the highest tax on wine in the nation, and the second highest tax on beer in the nation. Doubling these taxes will put us more than double the national average, in many cases, multiple times the national average. It doesn't seem right to me that these taxes should be so far above the national average when most taxes in Alaska are below the national average. I'm also concerned that as we make alcohol in Alaska more expensive than in other states, Alaskans will look to buy their alcohol from those other states. It's not difficult to buy alcohol online, and this tax will make that option more attractive. Many Alaskans travel out of state, and this tax makes loading up your suitcase with alcohol more attractive. And it will make illegally importing alcohol more lucrative and thus more tempting. Brewing in Alaska is one of few manufacturing industries that are growing in Alaska. When we opened our doors 20 years ago, there were less than a dozen breweries in the state. Today, there are 20-something. Doubling our taxes doesn't make sense. You wouldn't double taxes on the oil industry. We've grown as an industry without incentives like the film industry had, and we certainly don't get tax credits for exploring new beer styles. We already pay our fair share. We have an extremely high beer tax. Please don't double it. Please do not support HB 248.
Thank you very much. Kristen Miles, Anchorage.
Good morning. My name is Kirsten Miles. I'm the executive director of Cook Inlet Char. I'd like to keep my comments very brief because I think you'd find them rather redundant, and I'd like to give the retailers and business owners more time to address you. I'd like to thank you for being here and giving up your Saturday and allowing us to address you. I am here representing the food and beverage retailers in Anchorage, and we oppose HB 248. For the reasons you've heard over and over, what I'd really like to stress is that this alcohol tax would put us at 5 to 8 times the national average. I understand the need to look to all industries to bring in revenue and to look at possible tax increases, but 5 to 8 times the national average, that is ridiculous to ask one industry to bear that kind of burden, and that's all. And thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk to you.
Well, thank you for joining us today. The man who only means one name, Darwin, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to the Labor and Commerce Affiliation. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you got our undivided attention.
Thank you. My name is Darwin Dewar. I own Darwin's Theory, small bar downtown Anchorage, and I'm chairman of the board for statewide CHAR. I'll keep my testimony short here as well because, as Kirsten just said, it's been very redundant. A couple things I'd like to point out, though, is since the last tax that was said to be a 10-cent a drink tax back in 1971-72 was 15 years ago, and it showed what made us the highest. Why, what happened to all that money, and how come it didn't do what it was supposed to do? An alcohol tax is supposed to be the godsend for all this, all the health problems. Didn't happen that way. Another point that I'd like to make is that the 10 cent per drink wholesale level, that's at the wholesale level. I can't really raise my drink prices by 10 cents. I would have to do it by a quarter at a time. So this is an increase at the retail level and then an increase for the consumer that is purported to be 10 cents a drink. And what consumers do when the prices go up, they're going to drink something, they're going to drink a cheaper type of beer. For instance, they'll drink Old Milwaukee instead of Heineken. And the case is that in Alaska, products are more expensive than products that are coming from outside. So what would happen is our Alaskans, brewers, winery people and distillers are going to be hurt by this tax. So, among other things, that's all I have to say because you've already heard everything else.
Well, thanks again, Darwin.
All right, thank you very much.
Don Grassi, Anchorage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Don Grassi, and I'm the president of K&L Distributors in Anchorage, Alaska. We employ over 200 Alaskans, and we've been doing business in the state since 1940. We could not be more disappointed as a company and an industry with the governor and his administration on this proposed alcohol tax. Our company and many in the industry reached out to the governor and his staff prior to the tax being announced and communicated to them how high our taxes already are in Alaska. We shared that with his staff, and we also were indicated that this alcohol tax increase would be a drop in the bucket for any increase. So we were taken aback by his proposals that showed that the alcohol tax would go up 5 to 8 times, as Kirsten mentioned. When we compare the alcohol tax proposal to some of the other governor's proposals, the gas tax, which in Alaska is number 50 in the nation, and doubling it makes it 24, where the average gas tax in the nation is 30 cents. The fishing tax was proposed to go up 1%. The mining tax was proposed to go up 2%. Cigarette taxes will move us to number 8 in the nation. While we're not proposing, or I'm not proposing in any way, raising selective industry taxes, it appears to us that the alcohol tax is out of step with all other proposals that the governor and his staff have promoted. While it's promoted as a dime a drink, the actual cost to consumers will be much greater than that. And in many cases, the cost of our goods will go up by more than 20% to a consumer in the state of Alaska. We feel that the hospitality industry is one of the few industries in Alaska that is showing great potential to grow despite the headwinds that are facing our state. And we feel that these proposed taxes will stifle that industry and put another industry in a tailspin. As many have said, the power to tax is the power to destroy. I hope the legislature that we know are working very hard on our fiscal issues will see that the alcohol tax is not the solution for our state's problems. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks again, Don. Matt Tomter, Anchorage.
Yes, good morning. Matt Tomter, thank you for having me. I own the Eagle River Ale House and the Palmer City Ale House. Two restaurants. I employ between 90 and 120 people a year, depending on what time of year it is. I just kind of want to go over the great scheme of things here, what's going on in the industry. And what we've faced over the last 12 months is we've faced an increase in minimum wage of $2 an hour, which increases my cost per year by $100,000 a year. We've now fallen into meeting the Obamacare requirements or the Affordable Care Act requirements, which became, which I fell into beginning January 1st. It's still unclear exactly what that's going to cost us, but it's going to cost us between $90,000 and $160,000 a year to provide insurance to everybody, which is completely unaffordable, you know. And so then we look at this increase in liquor tax or alcohol tax. And, you know, we sell about 3,800 kegs of beer a year. And, you know, the cost, just the increase in cost for me, that we'll have to pass on to consumers is significant. Ultimately, my cost with all of those things in mind, for 2016, 2017 raises my operational costs over $250,000 a year. And, you know, at some point, there's a breaking point on how much we can charge for a burger, how much we can charge for a beer, because people just can't afford to keep paying more and more and more. They'll just stop going out. And if we look at the industry statewide, or just look at here just on the road system, the alcohol and food service industry is one of the primary employers. I mean, it's a gigantic employer, and the less business they get, we work on such fine margins, the more expenses we get, the more we have to charge, there comes a point where we can't make the margins. And it's just a huge concern. We care about the people that work for us, and we just want to be able to keep doing what we're doing. So, you know, I definitely oppose the increase in alcohol tax, and hope you take my comments into consideration. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you again for joining us today. Joey Kodorich, Anchorage, I think I'm butchering your name, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joel Kodorich, K-A-D-A-R-A-U-C-H.
Well, I apologize. I had some typos in it.
No, that's all right. I represent the Odom Corporation as well as the Alaska Beer, Wine, and Spirits Wholesalers Association. Odom Corporation is a 80-year-old local corporation employing over 400 Alaskans. 98% of our jobs are full-time with a great benefit package. This morning I'd like to comment on two facets of HB 248, and I do apologize if it's redundant, but I think the points are worth codifying. First, if selective tax increases are debated as part of the solution to the state's deficit, we should recognize the relative burden which each sector currently bears. When Alaska's alcohol excise taxes were tripled in 2002, we became the highest tax state in the nation in wine, beer, and spirits. Today, among all states, Alaska remains yet the highest in two of these categories and second highest in the third. Within your bill packets are three graphs I sent representing this tax burden graphically compared to all states and depicting where we would rank should HB 248 become law. Seven times the national average for beer, six times for wine, and over five and a half fold for spirits. While the total per capita tax burden in Alaska is by far the lowest in the nation, I know of no other Alaskan industry which comes even close to such a disproportionately high tax burden relative to the other 49 states. Simply put, a broad brush approach to increases selective taxes which fails to recognize existing disproportionality is onerous and inequitable. My second issue, with regard to the proposed alcohol tax increases contribution in solving our budget deficit, HB 248 purports to increase state revenues by roughly $40 million. However, according to the DOR presentation made to you last Wednesday, only half of that $40 million, only $20 million, will be pledged to the unrestricted general fund and will thus provide minimal contribution to a deficit reduction. In sum, I and the Alaskans I represent oppose this bill very strongly. It disproportionately increases a burden which we all must share to an unreasonable extreme for this one industry, while providing an insignificant monetary contribution to our overall deficit, and at half its stated amount. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Let's see. Mike Coons, Palmer, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Oh, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have our undivided attention.
Thank you, sir. My name is Mike Coons from Palmer, and I'm speaking against HB 248. I'm also a retired paramedic, so I've seen abuse and addiction firsthand. This testimony will sound a lot like my testimony last week against HB 249 on the gas tax. Why? Because the reasons against sin taxes go to all sin taxes and the real consequences of sin taxes. The written version of my testimony has more detail in Governor Walker's taxation schemes that I have sent to you. Section 3 of this bill shows a 100% increase in sin tax on all alcohol products. I don't see any tax on homebrew. $50 a bucket, last I heard, may be cheaper to buy homebrew. If this sin tax goes through, I'm sure the bootleg cost to the dry villages will jump hugely. So why do we have sin taxes? The socialist liberal stated goal is to make it so expensive that the users stop buying the product, which the lady talked about earlier. What real decrease has there been? Those with an alcohol addiction buy home brew. I've seen this firsthand in the villages. The gentleman couldn't even pay his electric bill, but he could pay $50 for a bucket of home brew. Bag on the street corner, we see that in Anchorage all the time. To buy the needed rock gut so that they and those that have no regard for other people's safety get drunk, drive, and kill people on the roads, which I've dealt with for far too many years. So what is the result of the sin taxes? The state and local government as well get a nice hunk of money to put into the general fund. Oh, sure, some of that general fund may go to HHS and rehabilitation efforts, but that is a drop in the bucket compared to the total sin taxes taken in to fund a bloated local and state government. For once, it would be great if those that want to tax the daylights out of us would just admit that sin taxes on alcohol, cigarettes, gasoline, etc., are really a means to attack users of a product that they hate so that the progressive goals of big government can be funded. So what percentage of the sin tax will be on those who have an addiction? 10%? 5%? What percentage of the sin tax will be on people like me who like a beer, some wine with dinner, or an evening sip of whiskey? I just purchased a 1.75-liter bottle of Black Velvet the other day for $25. I would expect that probably go up closer to $30 to $40 if this happens. So that I'm looking at probably a 90%, 75%. Although I doubt there is a good study that would show the impact on all purchases of alcohol, I'm betting that the impact will be paid for by the responsible users in the neighborhood of 90 to 95%. And to the addicts, maybe 5%, maybe 10%. The bottom line is that if this is were to pass, it will generate a nice sum of money to do exactly zero to alcoholism, zero to homeless, and zero to reducing DUIs, etc. Like so many, one of the things that was commented earlier, somebody talked about offsetting this with lottery. I was stationed in Ohio. I've seen what lotteries do, and I'm totally against that. In closing, like so many bills of this nature, the proponents use the excuse, quote, this isn't a perfect bill but needs to pass, end quote. I agree. This is not a perfect bill. It's a horrible bill that punishes responsible adults while doing nothing against the sustainable budget. Get a big backhoe and bury this bill 10 feet down and pour concrete over it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mike. Michelle Shapiro? Got a feeling I got another typo. Michelle from Wasilla.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Shapiro. I'm the director of Matsu Char. I speak on behalf of restaurant bars and package stores in the Matsu Borough. Hospitality members here are strongly opposed to House Bill 248. I would like to just reiterate what many citizens who have already testified have stated. Alaskans pay the highest alcohol tax in the nation already. That is a extremely heavy burden for a single industry to bear. And that's all I have for you. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you very much. We've finished for the time being with everybody that's dialing in. We have two people signed up in the room. Kate Burkhart. Thank you for joining us, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kate Burkhart. I'm the Executive Director of the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and the Alaska Mental Health Board, the State Planning Councils for Behavioral Health. My comments today are on behalf of those boards and no one else. We have provided written comment to the committee in support of HB 248. My comments this morning are to encourage the committee to consider this bill as part of a larger attempt to solve our budget problems that includes reduced spending, reforms to contain costs, and efforts to generate revenue. Your colleagues in the Senate right now are discussing criminal justice reform that will only be successful if we have a robust community health and social services sector to support folks that we're hoping not to incarcerate. And so this is a multidimensional problem that requires a multidimensional solution. And so considering this bill in the context of other bills that seek to generate revenue is important, rather than as a standalone bill that is just about one industry or one cost driver in the state. So that would be our encouragement to the committee and the larger body, is to look at this as a whole. With that, I think our written comments speak about the specific issues that we believe HB 248 addresses, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for joining us.
May I?
Certainly.
Thank you.
We take a question?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Burkhart, the $20 million that currently goes into the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Treatment Fund, are you pretty familiar with how that fund operates?
Yes, sir.
All right. As I understand it, this would double the amount that goes into that fund. Is that your understanding?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, yes, sir. Based on the governor's letter, I think the intention is to follow the current practice of half of the excise tax going into the alcohol and drug fund and half going into the general fund.
Well,
thank you. Do you know whether or not that the $20 million, if it passed, that would go into this fund would be omitted from some other behavioral health account or mental health trust account? In other words, is it a net gain of $20 million to treat, or is it going to be status quo? Do you know that?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, those appropriations are made by this body, by the legislature. And so it's the legislature that decides how much goes to what program. Currently, there is substantial general fund mental health, as well as revenue from the alcohol and drug fund, going toward behavioral health prevention and treatment, more than $20 million specifically to substance use disorder treatment, services like residential treatment and detoxification services. And so, as with every year, all of the money is before the legislature. The legislature decides how to appropriate that. So if there were to be any supplanting, that would happen in the legislature.
I just didn't know if you I can certainly research that, and there's all sorts of people that will help me do that. I just didn't know, as you sit here, if you knew.
Thanks again. Brandon Howard, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you've got our undivided attention.
My name is Brandon Howard. I live here in Juneau, Alaska, and I'm starting up Amalga Distillery, a new distillery here in Juneau. And I'm coming forward today to talk about the business end of it for me in starting a new business. I appreciate the opportunity to start a new business here in the community that I love. And I know that it is an industry that comes along with some social issues, and I'm excited to, you know, be contributing tax-wise. However, you know, looking forward at just the numbers, the spirit excise taxes, it will double my taxes. Already I'll be paying about, you know, we've been talking about 10 cents per drink. It'll be about $4 per bottle, but doubled, that'll be about $8 per bottle. It taps into margins in a huge way for me. And living in Alaska, we already have a premium in getting materials here and getting things outside of the state. So it tacks on another premium, making it even harder to start up the distillery, makes it a less viable business for me. And it's also going to slow down my growth and expansion. Now, this is just for one distillery. This is a really thriving, growing market down south. You know, another way that you could see these taxes doubled is if we could double the number of distilleries in the state. However, the border, the boundaries and, you know, challenges to open, you know, aside from the capital, aside from taxes, just all the permitting and processes, it's a really tough industry to open up and get into. And so this tax just adds on another burden that we're going to have to pass on to the customer, which then also makes me non-competitive. So when I do start exporting out of the state, I'm going to be on a shelf with a cheaper bottle, and I don't know how much I can leverage Alaska and, you know, that interest in the customer. My prices are going to be much greater than the prices of other small craft distilleries. Further, you know, in the beginning, I'm just going to be distributing within the state. And so this tax is going to be a burden on my business and consumers within the state. So we're not even looking at bringing money and revenue from outside of the state. So I'm speaking out against HB 248. It's going to be a strain on my small business and really hold back growth in a big way. Thank you for your time.
I think several years ago we passed legislation that would allow micro distilleries to have tasting rooms and give you parity with the micro brewers. And that was, as I recall, a bit contentious, but it went into effect. And it'll be one thing that should help you because you're going to have to get your product out locally as well. And
that was huge for Heather Shade up at Port Chilkoot Distillery.
Yep.
That was a big help for her.
It helped out two on the peninsula, and I think one or two in Anchorage as well.
Right.
But Heather was the driving force, and did a lot of testifying and rattled a lot of cages, and also has a nice product.
Absolutely. And that is something else. We are putting out a premium product. I mean, Heather Shades gin sits on the shelf, well, not for very long on the shelf, but $37 a bottle, that's not inexpensive, and her whiskey is selling for about $70 a bottle. So these are premium products that we're bringing forward and that we're wanting to get out of the state to bring in revenue from outside of the state and really enter this thriving market.
What product line are you going to be developing?
So I'm going to be making a gin. It's called Juniper Gin, J-U-N-E-A-U-P-E-R. Proud of the name. We're also going to be doing a single malt whiskey. As you guys look out the window right now, you can see it looks an awful lot like Scotland here, just that rainy, dreary, but it's the perfect temperature for making a single malt whiskey. We need that temperate, cool climate. And we're also looking forward to adding value to, I'm looking at pictures right now of Alaskan farms, and something I want to do is use Alaskan grains, Alaska barley, wheat, and rye, and adding value to those crops. So it's a big picture, and I'm really looking forward to getting off the ground and growing and creating tax revenue and jobs.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you all.
Is there anybody else in the room that hasn't signed up that would care to testify?
I signed up.
Oh,
Jack Manning.
Oh, yep, just did. Says brand new. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Jack Manning. I'm from Juneau, Alaska. I own a convenience store, liquor store here in town. I'm also the president of the local char, and I'm on the statewide char board. So been kind of involved in this industry for quite a while. I'll be brief because a lot of what I was going to say has already been said. So I applaud both the legislature and the governor for dealing with this fiscal issues that we're dealing with right now. It is true that this will really be a tax on consumers. Really, I feel it's unfair for one segment of Alaskans to face the burden of this fiscal crisis, that being the alcohol consumer. I think that we're all in this together. And this is a radical tax rates. They'll be very radical. And the state of Washington just did something similar to this, changed their tax thing. It had some interesting results, okay? So it basically almost destroyed Brandon's industry. There was just a birth of distillers in that state that were able to sell to the state, and when that disappeared, that industry was hit hard, very hard, and it was just starting. So the liquor stores in Oregon along the border are all up 35% because of the big tax increase in the state of Washington. So we don't have border stores, but we do. We have the internet. So any one of you right now could go to the internet and get a bottle of any choice delivered to your office probably for free, free freight. It's remarkable. If you flew here on Alaska Airlines, right there on your Alaska Airlines magazine is how to join the Alaska Club and get wine, paying no state tax and no control from the, for the state control. So I just wanted to mention those things, and a lot of what I was going to say has already been said, so I won't take up any more of your time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for joining us. Any questions? With that, we is there anybody else online or in the room that would care to testify on this bill? We're going to keep public testimony open, but we are going to switch over to House Bill 252 now.
Could we have a two-minute
ease? Certainly. Brief at ease. We're back on the record, and the next public testimony will be on House Bill 252. And I think we'll start with Carol Fraser in Anchorage. Are you with us, Carol?
Good morning. This is Carol. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation, and good to hear your voice. It's been a while.
It has. Thank you, Representative Wilson. This is Carol Fraser. I'm the general manager of the Lakefront Anchorage, formerly the Millennium Alaskan Hotel. And today I'm calling in as an Alaskan and a member of our tourism industry, and want to discuss HB 252. The Lakefront Anchorage employs over 120 year-round Alaskans, and most of these Alaskans are housekeepers, bussers, front desk clerks, drivers, and servers. I think that this bill is really a jobs bill. Our hotel operates year-round, but we're primarily reliant on tourism. 70% of my revenue is received between May 15th and September 15th, the 4 months that the cruise ships bring visitors to Alaska. HB 252 proposes to increase our cruise ship passenger tax by $15 million, and I'm concerned if the legislature has really looked at the potential repercussions of what this bill will do, not just to the tourism industry, but to the jobs that will be affected if it passes. In 2006, a voter initiative to tax each cruise ship customer was passed, and that resulted in taxation that made Alaska the most expensive destination in the world for cruise ship operations. And the cruise ships are a floating hotel, and they can move anywhere in the world, unlike my hotel that stays here in Spinard. In 2010, as a result of this additional tax, the cruise lines moved their ships to other destinations around the world, destinations that brought them a higher profit and a higher return. And what happened after the cruise ships moved out of the state, this resulted in 140,000 less customers coming to Alaska, and then we had a loss of 5,000 jobs in 2010. 5,000 Alaskans lost their job that year. If you back up a little, in 2009, through agreements between our industry, the tourism industry, and the state government, there was a reduction in taxes. So the cruise ships, after they published their destinations 2 years later, they were able to move vessels back to Alaska. So since 2012, our tourism industry has increased each year. And this summer, we're supposed to have our highest visitation ever. So in spite of low oil prices and our state's budget deficit right now, tourism's going to have a banner year in 2016. And what this does is create more jobs for Alaskans, creates more revenue for our communities, and more taxes for our state. So tourism employs almost 40,000 Alaskans, and many of those jobs are entry jobs. Those are the first jobs that our kids get. My first job as an adult was in a hotel. All three of my kids have worked in a hotel. Two of my kids still have made their career in the tourism industry in Alaska. But we have to protect our industry. Alaska has a beautiful location, and tourism is one of the most renewable resources for Alaska. But we have to protect it. So I think we need to look at our past and use it to guide our future. And HB 252, again, will make Alaska uncompetitive in the worldwide cruise market. And as in the past, the cruise ships moved out of Alaska, and they'll do it again. And we have to really look at this as a jobs bill. And we can't afford to lose any more jobs for Alaskans. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carol.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Gideon Garcia, Anchorage.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I'm Gideon Garcia, Chief Operating Officer for Siri Alaska Tourism Corporation. I'm here today to speak against House Bill 252. Our company benefits from a strong cruise industry. Many guests coming off of cruise ships stay at our lodges in Seward and Talkeetna or take whale-watching cruises with our Kenai Fjords Tours business. Contrary to popular belief, not all cruise ship guests stay at their own hotels. Many of them come to Alaskan-owned businesses for visits or activities. Although this proposed increase in tax may seem small, any additional cost will reduce potential guest spend as they travel across our state. Since the funds raised from this tax are restricted by federal law on how they can be spent, what is to be gained? They can't be used in the general fund, from my understanding. The 2015 summer season, as Carol said, was the highest guest visitation recorded since the Alaska State Visitor Statistics Program started in 1988. It was a great year. We are seeing strong growth in the industry, but it has taken many years since the recession of 2009 for us to see this volume return. Why would we risk this growth with higher taxes? In general, we are against targeted taxes on businesses. I recognize that our state has a significant budget shortfall, and I appreciate all your efforts to resolve this. It's time we look at new resources of revenue to reduce this budget gap, broad-based sources that are equitable. We've seen a recent history on how past head tax efforts affected the cruise industry in Alaska. It weren't good. Please, let's not repeat the past. Thank you for your time and giving me some time this morning to address this issue.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Patty Mackey, Ketchikan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Patty Mackey, and I'm the President and CEO of the Ketchikan Visitors Bureau, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I will keep my comments brief. But I am asking this committee to consider the negative impacts of repealing the tax reduction for the cruise industry in communities where a local passenger vessel fee is also imposed. I'm fully aware of the fiscal issues that the state faces and that we expect you to resolve. However, the CPV fund, as you've already heard, is not a source of revenue that can be placed in the general fund to solve our financial issues. It has very specific parameters for its use. When the state fee was initially created, it caused an adverse impact on communities who depend on the cruise industry. High taxes and fees caused the cruise lines to take a hard look at the cost of doing business and resulted in fewer ships, fewer passengers, and less revenue, including local tax payments. 5 years ago, when the amended fee structure was put in place, which includes the tax reduction, we saw growth again in an industry that was on the decline. Ketchikan, like other cruise destinations, are more dependent than ever on locally generated revenue, including those sales taxes that are paid by our visitors that are going to help bridge the loss of state dollars. And we already face very strong competition from other cruise destinations around the world. Alaska's market share has declined steadily since 2007, when it was at 7%. Today, we hover around 4%. We need to be mindful that operating costs in Alaska are already among the highest of any destination that cruise lines visit. Our recognition through the tax reduction that cruise lines are helping to pay for services directly to those communities that serve them has helped send the message to them that Alaska is open for business and that we value the hundreds of millions of dollars that our relationship with the cruise line generates for Alaska businesses, local government, and the state of Alaska annually. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for participating. Bob Severston, Ketchikan.
Yes, good morning. I'm Bob Severston, and I'm here representing myself today. And thank you for the opportunity to speak. I am opposed to HB 252 and the mechanisms proposed. Following Governor Parnell's attendance at Cruise Shipping Miami in 2010, he worked to address the numerous industry concerns in regards to the cruise operation in Alaska. Within a month of the conference, the governor successfully worked with the state legislature to lower the cruise passengers' head tax. I was in Miami during those discussions, and all involved were concerned about the future of Alaska cruise industries. Our state should honor the past agreement, and if there is a concern, the state and the industry should sit down and work out an equitable agreement. The present tax promotes investment and meets the applicable federal and state laws whereby the tax assessed is applied to those services directly benefiting the passengers and vessels. I believe that increased taxes would only hurt local or state tourism businesses. The money collected will not benefit the general fund or promote the reduction of the state deficit. All HB 252 may do is jeopardize already struggling economy and send a wrong message to an Alaskan-friendly industry. Our state should learn from the past mistakes and successes while promoting the growth of independent Alaska businesses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob. Ryan Binkley.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Ryan Binkley. I'm the president of the Riverboat Discovery in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I call this morning to speak in opposition to House Bill 252. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born in Fairbanks. Our family's been building and operating boats all across the state for over 100 years. In 1950, my grandparents started a small river tour on the Chena and Tanana Rivers, and we've been a part of the tourism industry and the Fairbanks economy ever since. There was an interesting question yesterday in committee about the effects of the head tax way up here in Fairbanks, Alaska. The fact of the matter is Fairbanks is a cruise port no different than Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, and Skagway. We rely every bit as much as those communities do on the folks that cruise to Alaska and come to visit us. As a matter of fact, the folks in interior Alaska feel these effects even more because the itineraries that bring people to Fairbanks are the longest and most expensive, and they're the first ones that are priced out of the market when barriers to travel, like an increase in taxes, are put up. Also because only about a third of the folks who cruise to Alaska actually cross the Gulf, any reduction in the number of ships crossing the Gulf has a magnified effect on the people that visit the interior. It's pretty interesting. We often speculate about what a policy effect will be. If we increase a production tax here, what will be the effect on throughput in the pipeline? But we don't have to speculate in this case because we've been through it before. We saw the effects after the head tax was passed in 2006. Here in the interior, they were immediate and they were dramatic and they were not good. We saw right off the bat in 08 when the cruise companies were first able to react to the head tax, a dramatic decrease in the number of visitors, almost 40% drop for our business alone, and we were forced to scale back. We eliminated 70 positions. These were folks that had worked for us for decades, many times that I'd grown up with. Some of them were summertime seasonal employees, oftentimes college students who relied on summertime work to support their education, and they put the money that they earned right back into the local economy. Also, in contrast to the rest of the state, the interior hasn't seen the rebound in visitation that other communities have. There's still a lingering hangover from the effects of the cruise tax in 2006. We remained last year about 30% off where we were before the initiative was passed. I'm not naive. I understand these are trying times and historic times, and the state has to work together to solve our budget problems. But I'm left asking, why would we harm the economy of Alaska when HB 252 really does nothing to contribute to closing the fiscal gap? Any funds that are raised under it will be heavily restricted. They can't contribute to the general fund and don't help us get out of the situation that we're in. And it seems clear to me as well that they open the state up to potential litigation, possibly jeopardizing the entire tax program. The fact is the cruise companies won't be harmed by this. They can move the assets very quickly to other places in the world where they get a better return. It's the small Alaskan businesses like ours that rely on the people that travel on the ships that are going to feel the effects. So I urge you to oppose House Bill 252. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Steve Heitz, Skagway.
This is Steve Heitz. I'd like to speak briefly on House Bill 252. Can you hear me?
Yeah, could we get your affiliation, Steve?
Yes, Steve Heitz, 272nd Avenue, Skagway, Alaska. My wife, Gayla, and I own the Skagway Streetcar Company. We have been in business for 30 years. When the Alaska Cruise Ship Initiative was passed and the head tax was imposed, the cruise industry pulled ships out of Alaska because their cost of doing business increased. My family company had to hire the next year less people, and the next year less people. In the end, we had four less employees, and I ordinarily had 22 working for me. Fortunately, Governor Parnell saw the need to speak to this problem, And he went to Miami personally to see trade. And the governor of our sovereign state met with the presidents of the international cruise industry and asked them that if he said, if I can lower your cost of doing business, would you bring back your business to Alaska? I mean, this was a major thing. No one had ever done this before. I've been in the cruise industry one way or the other for 40 years. And the governor of a sovereign state asked for the business. If I can make it more competitive for your businesses. And they said, sure enough, you do that, we'll come back. The governor and the legislature worked together, reduced the head tax, the ships were redeployed back to Alaska. I put four people back to work. And I'll tell you, Mr. Binkley in Fairbanks has said it as clearly as anybody can. It's not going to do any good. This is not a way to fill this hole. This is a way to create a giant hole in an industry that is, at least in some small way, a bright spot in the economy as far as being able to employ people, put people to work, and be able to provide for an engine for the private sector. My company pays $70,000 in city sales tax in Skagway, Alaska. We pay $23,000 in property tax. If we are able to continue to be an engine in a small family business way, and employ people and provide for some kind of help in this situation, we will. We sure want to pay our fair share. But this is a way to drive away an entire sector of the economy. And we are in competition now, not just as we were back when the initiative was passed. We are now in incredible competition with the Asian market that wasn't there when the cruise ship initiative was passed. The companies are looking globally at their costs and their operating ratios. And if they see that Alaska, which used to be giving back in the early days when I first started out in the business, Alaska was 14% of the entire global cruise ship industry. And now Alaska is down to 4% in terms of what it brings to the industry, to the cruise line owners. We must remain competitive if we are going to remain a player, because China and the Asian market are growing at double digits, leaps and bounds, and that's where they're putting the tonnage. If we intend to even remain part of this global business, then we turn to our legislative leadership and ask for their help to, as small businesses, remain competitive by not imposing additional taxes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for joining us. Lawrence Gaffney, Juno.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Lawrence Gaffney. I'm the CEO of Huna Totem Corporation. We have 1,300 shareholders. We own and operate Icy Strait Point. Icy Strait Point is the largest employer and the largest sales taxpayer in the city of Huna, a rural community of 760 folks. Last year, we provided 125 jobs, 85% of which were local hire. We contribute over $4 million a year into a small rural community. The last time the cruise ship tax increase went into place, that resulted in a 30% decline in our business and less jobs the following year. 7 years later, things are better, but we've still not fully recovered from that high point. This May, we are completing a $40 million new investment program at our port in conjunction with the city of Huna as a model of public and private partnership, building a new cruise ship dock and expanding our facilities to welcome the industry, support our business, and support jobs. This tax increase will have a chilling effect on the attractiveness of Alaska to the cruise industry, which provides 90% of my firm's revenues and is responsible for an associated number of jobs. The result will absolutely be less ship calls, less profitability, less hiring, and a real kick in the gut to my corporation and to the city of Huna, who has just is just completing a $40 million investment program to support and expand our business and the economic driver of this small community.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak this morning.
Oh, thank you again. Is there anybody else online that cares to testify on this bill? Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify that hasn't signed up? With that, I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a brief at ease for probably 20 minutes or so to see if anybody calls in or walks in on either of these bills, because we noticed it for a little bit longer, but I've got a feeling that that won't be happening, but we're going to take a brief at ease, and then we will probably adjourn. We will adjourn and hold both bills over, but brief at ease. We're back on the record. Is there anybody at any of the LIOs that would hasn't testified that would like to testify on House Bill 248 or 252? Hearing none, we're going to keep the public testimony on both bills open, and most of the committee is going on to a another meeting, so we've lost just about everybody. And I would like to thank anybody that is still listening, and also ask the LIOs to submit any written testimony to hlac@akleg.gov, or anybody that's listening that hasn't testified that wants to add something, please email it to that address. And with that, we will adjourn at 12:02.